when private equity gets money and makes an acquisition, there is a dip in IRR. Mm-hmm. It's called J curve. So there is a dip because, you know, you put money in, but you're not getting anything back. You need to start creating the value.
Mm-hmm.
And that value needs to be created over typically 5-year horizon. And when you got a clear roadmap for executing your value, your investment thesis, you start creating that value, and your IRR, difficult abbreviation to pronounce, starts lifting up.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cross the hurdle rate of 8 to 10%, what's left is pure profit for private equity.
Willkommen bei Mendel Talks Finance, dem Podcast für die Finanzwelt, präsentiert von Viktor Mendel, der strategischen Managementberatung für Excellence in Finance.
Dear Natalia, welcome to today podcast episode. It's a great pleasure for me to have you here. Could you give us please some insights into your impressive professional journey, and perhaps you can share also some topics, what motivates you and what drives you?
Well, Victor, thank you so much. So thank you for having me here. My name is Natalia Meissner. I'm a solo consultant, and I founded my consultancy called Future Edge CFO about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm delighted to be on this podcast with you. It's our first podcast together, and I'm really excited by this.
Hopefully not the last one.
And I'm sure not the last one. I hope not the last one, yes. So listen, as I said, thank you for having me here. My professional journey spans 25 years. I can't believe how quickly the time has passed. So during the 25 years, I've worked with manufacturing companies, many manufacturing companies across the investment lifecycle of private equity firms, but not only private equity. And these companies were either in growth stage or they were scaling up rapidly to traditional buyout, seeking operational excellence, and also companies in distressed situations
mm-hmm.
that require turnaround expertise. I've also spent time with big multinationals, Eaton and Honeywell, where I learned pretty much everything from the technical side mm-hmm. and that there is to be learned, not just in finance, but across the whole spectrum of company value chain. And as I said at the beginning, I founded Future Edge CFO about a year and a half ago with a vision to help companies unlock trapped value, regardless of where they sit in the PE spectrum. So PE stands for private equity. This mm-hmm. podcast is about private equity. So when I use PE, I mean private equity. And what drives me is really translating investment theses into operational reality.
Mm-hmm.
There is something incredibly, incredibly satisfying about identifying hidden value. And every business, even the best businesses, they do have hidden value that's just untapped. And it can be about accelerating growth in a promising company, typically mm-hmm. startup or scale up. It's about optimizing operations in a mature business, or what's most difficult and challenging, revitalizing or struggling enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And all these three different situations, so growth, buyout, or distressed assets, that's where I come in and execute the changes needed to realize that value. And I have found that the approach must be tailored to the investment context.
Mm-hmm.
And the discipline of execution remains constant across all PE strategies. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yes, yes, yeah, sure. And I mean, what I hear that everything what you learned over the last 20, 25 years, you are bringing now in your consulting services and helping companies. Right? And it doesn't matter where the company is standing. So it's in a crisis stadium or is it restructuring case. After you help, let's say, it's better than before, right? And this is your passion.
Well, what's better? Let's absolutely, you're absolutely right. But the word better is a little bit vague. And in private equity context, better means that they can sell the company for more than they yes. paid for it. That's what better means.
You're
but
right.
That's from PE perspective. And PE doesn't have a great reputation because they can be ruthless. Mm-hmm. They often paint the walls, as I call it, when they're selling a company. So P historically has had a little bit of a bad reputation, and it still does, because they're so focused on, you know, selling the business at a higher cost,
mm-hmm.
at a higher price, no matter what the cost. And they mm-hmm. can walk over dead bodies to make that happen. And so better is very relative as a word.
You're right.
But from PE perspective, better means selling a business for more than they paid for it and selling it as quickly as possible, generating cash as rapidly as possible.
Mm-hmm. But I think also that PE can help company to get more focus and more clarity in the business. And what my experience is also that PE can help also through investment in the business to accelerate growth. No? So it's two different sides of the coins, right?
Yes, you got hundreds or thousands of PE funds, and there are PE funds and PE funds. The best PE for funds are the ones that really know how to execute operational improvements.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, it's one of the questions that we probably will explore later, but financial engineering no longer works in the PE space. It works only to a degree. Operational improvements are the key source of value creation in private equity.
Yeah. So fine-tuning just with nice PowerPoint slides, it's not working anymore. No? So you need a real improvement, right?
Yeah, painting the walls, as I put it, doesn't work anymore.
Exactly, yeah. So we are middle of that topic. So we are speaking today about private equity, so private equity business, and how it shapes the financial and operational strategies for the companies. No? So let's discuss about it. And I'm happy to have here an expert. So I have also my touch point with PEs, but you are definitely the expert here.
Thank you so much. It's probably an overstatement.
No. You are definitely an expert. No? That is for me, it's clear. So let's start for the first question. So I would love to ask you, so what are the key financial and maybe the operational factors that makes the company attractive for PEs?
So, heute mal Werbung in eigener Sache. Ich habe vier Fragen an Sie. Was könnte Ihre Finanzorganisation leisten, wenn Sie sie wirklich neu denken? Wie viel stärker wäre Ihr Bereich, wenn Finance das Geschäft aktiv unterstützt? Warum sollten nicht gerade Sie diesen nächsten Schritt gehen? Und die letzte Frage, warum nicht jetzt? Wir helfen Ihnen dabei mit einem Target Operating Model, das Klarheit schafft, mit wirksamen Business Partnering und mit echter Kulturtransformation, die alle mitnimmt. Vereinbaren Sie jetzt Ihr kostenloses Expertengespräch und sehen Sie, was möglich ist.
That's a fantastic question. Thank you for asking it. So, the attractiveness factors vary significantly across the PE spectrum. As I mentioned before, we've got three distinct situations where I focus on. We've got growth, we've got buyout, and we've got distressed assets.
Mm-hmm.
So for growth equity, typically investors prioritize revenue trajectory, and they typically seek 20% and more annual revenue growth
mm-hmm.
with very strong unit economics and clear market expansion potential. And when I talk about unit economics, not everybody's familiar with this term. I'm referring to the fundamental profitability of each business unit, mm-hmm. like the revenue and cost associated with acquiring and serving each customer. Another way of referring to unit economics is what's my cost to serve
mm-hmm.
in my business across different segments of the business or the, you know, individual customers. So these unit economics are extremely important, and in growth equity, they mean that the company makes healthy profit on each customer and each transaction, which indicates the business model is fundamentally sound.
Mm-hmm. This so is that's growth, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's growth. Now, in the buyout scenarios, which are different, the focus shifts from revenue growth to EBITDA improvement. And mm-hmm. EBITDA stands for earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, and amortization, as you know. Mm-hmm. So it's all about the EBITDA improvement potential. Typically 50 to 30% improvement to EBITDA. That's that they're looking for an opportunity. And the higher annual percentage improvement to EBITDA, the bigger the value potential for private equity. So if you're growing at 2% per year, it's not the same as you're growing at 5 or 10% per year.
Mm-hmm.
What's also very, very important in buyout scenarios is working capital efficiency or cash velocity and also the consolidation potential. So, you know, maybe adding additional businesses, mm-hmm. what's called, you know, bolt-on acquisitions or, you know, buy and build strategies. And research suggests that the multiple expansion now contributes only to about 16% of private equity returns, down mm-hmm. from nearly half in the past. So let me explain that multiple expansion concept because it's very, very important. It's when a company's valuation multiple, and valuation multiple, it's when you take the enterprise value and you divide it by EBITDA, very simplistically,
mm-hmm.
when that multiple increases during the investment period. So historically, PE firms could buy companies at lower multiples mm-hmm. and sell at higher multiples. But today's competitive market and macroeconomic environment, higher interest rates, they mean that right now the multiple arbitrage is no longer that attractive as it used to be. And right now it's all about operational improvements to drive the returns. And then we have the third situation. These are distressed assets or distressed mm-hmm. investments. And the attractiveness here is for investors is the business at its core viable? Is it still viable? Mm-hmm. But not the financial challenges that it's facing, be it, you know, cash flow issues or inflated cost structure. So they look for valuable assets, flexible cost structures, clear turnaround levers, value levers.
Mm-hmm.
The key question is always whether the fundamental business can thrive once financial issues are resolved. And what's fascinating about all these, you know, three situations is that the criteria, they're constantly evolving. So mm-hmm. we're seeing growth investors increasingly focusing on unit economics, buyout firms placing premium value on digital capabilities, and I'll talk about it maybe later, and distressed investors becoming more selective about operational turnaround
mm-hmm.
versus financial restructuring alone. So just to close, digital capabilities, it's very important, especially the buyout scenario. I mean, it's all about the technology, systems, data infrastructure, industry 4.0,
mm-hmm.
Digital processes that allow companies to operate really, really efficiently and gain a competitive edge. So that's really the three different attractiveness criteria and three different buyout or PE scenarios.
And does it mean also that this three different attractiveness have also three different PE types, let's say, no? Or is it mixed?
So the PE funds typically have an investment focus.
Mm-hmm.
So you could have a PE fund that focuses exclusively on distressed assets. You could have a PE fund that exclusively focuses on buyouts. You have PE funds that focus exclusively on growth.
Mm-hmm.
You also have other type of PEs that operate in the space called secondaries. So they it's a completely different PE asset class that mm-hmm. they're not going to talk about. And then you've got PEs that, you know, they're hybrid model. They focus a little bit on growth, a little bit on buyouts, a little bit on distressed assets. So there is a myriad of PE orientations that's possible.
Okay, great. So I understand. But I could imagine that for all PE types, liquidity is one of the, let's say, maybe one of the most important topics. No? So how do you see this topic? So how can it be unlocked, let's say, after the acquisition? No? But in the end, it's the only thing that counts is cash, right?
My gosh, music to my ears, this question. Absolutely. No. Liquidity, cash is honestly in private equity space, cash is the king. Let me explain that. So it's critical across all PE strategies, whether it's growth, whether it's distressed assets, whether it's buyout.
Mm-hmm.
But the approach to unlocking liquidity varies dramatically across these three different investment orientations. In growth equity, It's about extending the runway while funding expansion. And what is runway? Runway refers to how long a company can operate before needing additional funding. And that typically happens in startup environment.
Right.
So that additional funding or that runway is essentially the cash available divided by the monthly burn rate. Mm-hmm. Every month, the company is burning a certain amount of cash. So if you can extend the runway by focusing on the optimization of unit economics and capital efficiency, like a SaaS company, for example, SaaS meaning service as a software, then you can. And I incidentally worked with a SaaS company where we extend to improve the runway by reducing customer acquisition payback from 11 to 11 months. And effectively, we created a 40% more growth runway without additional funding from investors.
Okay.
So this is in the growth scenario. For buyouts, working capital represents an immediate value opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Not only working capital, to be honest, also CapEx. But working capital is typically where you start. And research indicates that buyout-backed manufacturers typically release 15 to 20% of working capital within the first year. Mm-hmm. After the acquisition. And I recently helped or worked with an automotive supplier where we freed up 8.5 million euros approximately in trap cash within 90 days through inventory optimization and receivables process improvements only. And we essentially converted these assets that were sitting on the balance sheet into cash that could be deployed elsewhere. And PE, of course, loved to pull cash out of the business. It's a key metric for them. So when you free up cash, it can either be redeployed strategically to reinvest further growth of the business, or it can be paid back to private equity.
Sure.
Who uses to buy new companies or pay back to limited partners. And LPs are really, really pushing to get money back as soon as possible. And then the final is the stress situation. Now, here liquidity is literally survival. Here you need to implement, you know, very rigorous cash flow management process, very aggressive collection strategies, very, very different vendor negotiation tactics. And I happen to be working with a manufacturer right now who is in a stressed asset situation. And that's exactly what we're doing. A lot of emergency liquidity through focused receivable collections, inventory liquidation, to create breathing room for broader restructuring of the company. And yeah, that's basically an answer to your question.
Yeah, so that means that it doesn't matter in the end what kind of business model the company or the PE investor has. So cash or liquidity is top priority, you know, in all businesses, of course. No? So and the point is what I'm wondering is if a CFO who's working in a company and with a new investor or old investor, doesn't matter. So an investor has, of course, some, maybe short-time goals, no? So maybe 2, 4, 5 years. But of course, there are also long-term goals for a company, no? So growing for the next 10, 20, 100 years. No? So this is, I could imagine, a huge challenge to balance this different goals, no? Short-term goals from the investors, from the PEs, but long-term goals also from the business, for the company. How do you see this challenge? So how is it possible to balance this goals?
In private equity, what happens is you've got a key metric in private equity is called internal rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you being a finance professional, you know very well what internal rate of return is. So it's a return needed for, you know, for your discounted cash flow, for your investment, whatever you invest in,
sure.
What is the rate at which I get my money back?
Yeah.
And you know that the higher the IRR, the more attractive the investment is. And typically you also use payback period, which in private equity is called money on money, MON. So how do you balance it? Typically in private equity, the hurdle rate for IRR is 8%. 8 to 10%. This is what the LPs are expecting from their investment. And when private equity gets money and makes an acquisition, there is a dip in IRR. It's called J-curve. So there is a dip because you know, you've put money in, but you're not getting anything back. You need to start creating the value.
Mm-hmm.
And that value needs to be created over typically 5-year horizon.
Okay.
And when you've got a clear roadmap for executing your value, your investment thesis, you start creating that value and your IRR, difficult abbreviation to pronounce, starts lifting up.
Mm-hmm.
Then when you cross the hurdle rate of 8 to 10%, what's left is pure profit for private equity.
Mm-hmm.
And top performing PE firms, they exceed 30% IRR. That's really top performers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very lucrative. And the way to do that is speed. You have to do this quickly, not longer than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really about having very, very solid strategy, very, mm-hmm. very solid execution and implementation toolkit. And there is no miracle to it. You can't paint the walls in one day and sell your business for twice the money you paid.
Yeah. So, okay. I see. I understand. So that means that these goals are not necessarily complementary. So the CFO is, have to look to a faster return on investment. And this is good for the business. And this is also good for the investor. No? So as shorter the ROI, the better for both, let's say. No?
Well, the higher the IRR, the better it is for PE.
Yeah,
absolutely. But you know, people inside the portfolio company, they don't know these metrics.
Yeah,
they think about EBITDA.
Yeah.
They think about fixed costs. They think about cash flow. So the metrics inside portfolio companies are not the same metrics as the metrics that PE use.
You're
so
they're right,
two distinctive set of metrics. And now when you want to align portfolio leadership with PE mindset, both sides need to understand each other's metrics,
mm-hmm.
and they align. So the most management teams don't understand the PE metrics. They need to be educated. And then they need to make a link between their internal metrics and the PE metrics. And if that alignment is done simplistically, then of course both teams will operate in tandem and they will understand each other. But often they don't.
So I think that this, I can't imagine this is not an easy one. Huh? So to combine both targets, let's say. And yeah, I think the CFO have to know it. Huh? Or they need maybe an expert beside himself to get support, no? Like you, for example, as a PE expert, and you can support and also the CFO in this topic where he is maybe not the best one. No? It's not bad, but you have to know it. No?
Well, and that's the role of operating partner. So operating partner, I'm an external operating partner. A lot of big PE funds have their own internal operating partners.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-size and small PEs, they don't have operating partner. So operating partner is that liaison between the PE and the portfolio company.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that glue, yeah, that brings together the two parties. And that's the role of an operating partner. And that's what my company does, providing external operating partner services to PEs.
Perfect. Okay, now I fully understand. Would you say, if you look to the CFO again, would you say this challenge is the biggest challenge for the CFO, or is there another big challenge what you would like to mention it?
Well, so I mean, is your question about CFO, the role of CFOs in the PE space?
No, exactly. Yeah, the CFO in the PE space, let's say. Nah? So to handle these different goals, what we already discussed, nah? So this is a huge challenge. Are there other challenges for the CFOs? Or would you say this is the biggest one?
Well, no, the CFO role transforms dramatically under PE ownership. It's mind-blowing how it transforms. Because, and again, it's a little bit different depending on the investment orientation.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take growth equity again. In growth equity, the CFO becomes a strategic scaling partner to the CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And industry research indicates that the CFOs spend nearly half of their time in growth scenarios on strategic initiatives,
mm-hmm.
versus about a quarter pre-investment. So clearly, they need to step up on the strategic side of things. And they're building infrastructure to support 3 to 10 factor growth of the company while optimizing unit economics and preparing for future fundraising or funding rounds. And the key, we've been talking about runway, and key is focusing on managing the runway, extending it, ensuring that the company has sufficient cash to reach its next milestone before requiring additional capital from investors. Mm-hmm. So it really is about trade-offs between growth and cash preservation. And that's where the CFO needs to be very, very good in maintaining the balance. For buyouts, so in buyout scenarios, CFO, for CFOs, the role really shifts to value creation leadership.
Mm-hmm.
So they become CFOs of the investment, not just the company. And success is measured by investment returns rather than financial stability. So what the CFOs do is they lead cross-functional improvement initiatives alongside operating partner and the whole management team, implementing rigorous performance management systems. What they also do is they focus on multiple expansion levers. Mm-hmm. And there are hundreds of levers that you can deploy. But I've mentioned all these levers, it's about operational improvements that can increase the company's valuation multiple at exit, not just earnings. So the CFOs, they really focus on multiple extensions and operational improvements, and they're in the middle of all the transformation initiatives. And last but not least, at least we have distressed assets.
Mm-hmm.
Here the CFO becomes the cash preservation leader and restructuring architect. So they typically spend over a third of the time on stakeholder communication alone, talking to banks, talking to vendors. A lot of people get nervous when you've got a distressed situation. And they really manage these complex relationships with lenders, vendors, creditors, while providing real-time data for critical decisions.
Oh my God. I mean, these are quite a lot of different goals the CFO have to focus now. So you are right. And I fully agree that the role of the CFO today is quite complex. Now. And my experience is in a complex situation with a lot of different goals, I love to work with a target operating model. Now. So where you can, let's say, try to combine and connect the different goals and follow to the different goals straight away with a clear strategy, without losing one of the goals. Would you say a target operating model is a suitable tool to combine with all these different goals?
Well, target operating model, if I understand the meaning of what you mean by target operating model, it's for a CFO to move from reporting the past to architecting the future.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it is. In PE space, a target operating model is critical. So CFOs have to quickly pivot from reporting the past to architecting the future while maintaining the financial discipline that got them to the role of the CFO. Mm-hmm. So definitely yes.
Perfect. So we have spoken a lot about financials and what is interesting for PEs and where they focus and what are the challenges for the CFOs. But I think there are also for PEs, topics that are non-financial, but also very, very important. What would you say are these topics?
Absolutely. Now you hit the nail on the head, as we say it in English. So non-financial factors are very important. Then they often determine investment success.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the priorities will differ across the PE strategies. And because I focus on growth, buyouts, and distressed assets, maybe I'll discuss again how these non-financial factors, how they play out in the different scenarios. So in growth equity, investors focus intensely on leadership vision and adaptability. Entrepreneurs, they're different than managers.
Yeah.
And research suggests that over 80% of growth investors consider founder adaptability as their most critical non-financial criterion.
Mm-hmm.
And they're asking, can this team and that company that we invested in scale the organization 5 to 10 times?
Wow.
Can they attract elite talent? Is there true product market fit beyond early adoption? So that's the non-financial characteristics that is being sought after by private equity and VC firms.
Yeah.
And growth scenarios. And buyout situations, it's different. Investors prioritize operational discipline and management depth.
Mm-hmm.
So they're really evaluating the organization's performance orientation and receptiveness to PE ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And industry data shows that most buyout firms now have dedicated frameworks to assess digital capabilities during the due diligence. Because I mentioned earlier that digital capability is a major lever in buyout scenarios. So mm-hmm. more and more attention is paid to digital capabilities. And having ability to develop these capabilities is mm-hmm. is a critical factor in buyout scenarios. And I did explain what digital capabilities mean, but maybe I should repeat it. I'm referring to how effectively a company leverages technology and data to drive mm-hmm. business performance. So it's everything from automated production systems to advanced analytics that inform, say, pricing decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And these capabilities have moved from nice to have in the past to essential value drivers. And then lastly, distressed investments. Here, the non-financial factors that are of immense importance to investors is leadership resilience.
Mm-hmm.
And my experience, I've worked with a lot of distressed companies, shows that management's prior restructuring experience correlates with significantly better investment outcomes.
Yeah.
So that's what really, really matters. Also, you know, ability to manage different stakeholders in distress situation is extremely important. How you manage customers, suppliers, and employees, and how you make sure that they don't jump the boat, so to speak.
So if I would try to summarize it and to compromise it as to the point, and when I understand you right, the most important topics have the right strategy, to have the discipline to follow and to operational this strategy. And in the end, you mentioned a lot of topics about the people, to have the right people on the bus, right? I think this is what counts in the end. No? So to have the strategy, to have the discipline, and to have the right people that work on this strategy and this in the operational work to make a company successful, right?
Totally. I mean, it's all about people. And, you know, right now with so much buzz about AI saying that it's going to take our jobs, AI is fantastic, but it's never going to replace the human judgment.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt that people will still remain for many, many years a critical factor in every domain of life. So yes, it is all about people. No doubt about it.
I couldn't summarize it better, Natalie. The time is running and running. So thank you very much for this fantastic interview. I'm sure this for all our listeners, that was a lot of valuable content and insights. So it was a really great pleasure for me. Thank you very much.
Well, Victor, it was a pleasure being here. I wish we could have covered much more ground because this is a topic for hours and hours.
Sure.
But it was the great beginning. Maybe we can do part two.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Und das war Mendel Talks Finance. Vielen Dank, dass Sie uns begleitet haben. In jeder Episode bieten wir Ihnen tiefe Einblicke in die Strategien, Visionen und Innovationen, die die Finanzwelt von morgen prägen. Wir hoffen, Sie haben wertvolle Erkenntnisse dabei gewonnen. Wenn Sie Mendel Talks Finance abonnieren, bleiben Sie immer auf dem Laufenden. Wir sprechen mit hochkarätigen Gästen, die die Zukunft der Finanzwelt mitgestalten. Weitere Informationen finden Sie unter viktormendel.de. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und bis zu unserer nächsten Folge von Mendel Talks Finance.